This tape is being made on Tuesday, September 6th at Penasco Elementary School.
Second night.
If you want me to turn it off anytime, just we will. I have a pause button. So.
And then okay. When they see it, you know, in written form, they just memorize it. So the next time they see it, they're just memorizing.
Okay.
Isn't that called rote learning or something? That's all they're really doing.
Okay.
And I think they need more hands-on material activities, like probably traditional oven, bread making, pottery.
Yeah. Why don't you tell me, just so I know what's been going on, how often do you meet with the kids? You know, what kinds of things have you been doing with them? Just so I get a picture of what.
Well, see, last year, I didn't really get to meet with the kids, doing Picker, like the language part, I didn't do. Margaret did that part.
Did she? Okay.
I just did the tutoring part, in the areas where they really needed help.
Okay.
But she was the one that was doing like the language part of it, and what she was doing with them was like I would more or less tell her what had to be done with them, so I was kind of like always preparing for her what had to be done. But she was telling me what was real helpful was that the kids weren't learning like
yeah, it's okay.
She said that they were learning more like just speaking to them.
Right, okay, yeah.
Because like we were doing like color things and like the parts of the body, and you know, we tell them, well, this is so and so, and we bring a picture for them or whatever, and do an activity to, you know, strengthen their learning. But she said that they're better learners when they hear it.
Yeah.
And then another thing that I was telling her that I had problems with the year before was that these kids, they're just, like I'm saying, they're just memorizing just only for that time. And there's no feedback going on after they leave here at home. And that's how come it makes it real hard, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. I feel like I really didn't accomplish anything.
Okay, yeah.
And
okay.
Then like this Title VII people, well, they're telling me, that's all the time I can spend with the kids, but really I'm really supposed to spend time with them like they're considered LEP students, limited English proficient.
Yeah.
And my biggest gripe about that is they're limited English proficient students. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're having a hard time learning the language. Like, okay, another thing that we were doing with them is telling them traditional stories, okay? It's told in Picarese. You know, they've completely tuned it off, okay? Completely tuned it off.
Because they don't understand enough?
Yeah, all they're waiting for is the English part, you know? And they don't try to tie it in.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So you're saying that they don't really understand enough Picarese to understand the stories. Yeah, it'd be just like me talking French or something to them. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good things to know.
Yeah.
You know, that's helpful for me to sort of plan. Yeah, I agree. I think it's very, very important. I mean, kids, you know, you're not going to memorize words. If I gave you German words, you know, it's not going to make any sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
The speaking part is the most important. And I think that's the kind of things that we want to, you know, think about.
Mm-hmm.
The writing should only be an aid. It should only be a help, okay? Because when you think about it, why should they even learn to write it?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to read? There's not much to read, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just some materials, but there's not too much to read. So I think that it's going to be important to know, you know, to have support for when they do develop more proficiency, okay? But I think that oral part is what is going to make most sense. You got to be able to talk so that it makes sense and it's not just memorization for them. Okay, good. That's a good one. What does this year look like? I mean, are you going to be doing the same thing? Or I mean, are they going to give you time to work more with the kids? Is Margaret still working?
I'm going to be doing the same thing. Well, see, that's how come I guess they're calling the governor now. They're supposed to do that way before you came, I know. But I don't know what
I, see, I asked if they did that. That's why he's calling. And I said, you know, it's just a good thing to do to let the governor know what's mm-hmm. happening so, you know, they don't get upset.
Yeah.
And so I, and he says, well, should I do that? And I said, yeah, I think you ought to call the governor and tell him.
Well, yeah. See, I'm going to be doing basically about the same thing.
Okay.
But I was telling Andy, I was telling him that being that I went to Silna,
mm-hmm.
I feel more comfortable if it's somebody doing the language part, somebody that I know will really, other than myself, really mm-hmm. do good for the children, you
right,
know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind doing it, you know, but I have so many things I have to take care of and everything, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the tutoring part is just a lot for me, you know, and yeah. I can't be doing the language part. And like last year I was kind of like the teacher telling Margaret what to do, and that's what they're trying to do, get a person on board to work just on Wednesdays doing the language part.
Okay, so they're seeing it once a week. How long?
It's just half a day.
Half a day.
Just from 12:30 to 2:30.
Okay.
But that person works all day long. Like in the morning, this person is supposed to develop materials to use
them. Oh, okay. Okay, so it's so they haven't found somebody to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret's not going to do it, right?
She can't do it because of Social Security reasons,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah.
And then I gave two other persons' names, but I guess Andy's trying to contact them now.
Yeah, okay. Why don't you tell me, what did you think of Silna? Did you get much out of it or no?
I did, but I'm still having problems like the writing
okay.
and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just can't seem to. I get it too confused with the English part, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And
yeah.
then, like, my instructors were telling me that it's not just something that's going to come overnight or whatever.
Yes.
And, like, I was telling them, I don't get to use it that much. You know, I hardly ever get to write it or anything,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So.
What kinds of things did you do at Silna?
Well, I took a oral traditional class, and I thought that was real helpful.
Oh, yeah?
Because I went to, I don't know if you know Larry Littlebird, that storyteller, that famous storyteller.
I've never met him, but I know the name.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And I thought that was real neat for the kids, and I already talked to my principal, and he was real fortunate about a week ago to go to a artisan's workshop
uh-huh.
or something in Santa Fe, and he met this guy,
oh.
and so he's going to bring him up, not just for the Pickery's kids, but
yeah.
the whole school
oh.
district.
Okay. So does he tell stories in English?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's real neat because, like the Indian stories that he has, like, it's not just of the area, but how he just draws in his audience, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, as an adult, that was real, you know,
uh-huh.
impressed. That was real.
Okay.
It was real interesting, and I thought something like that would be grateful, I think, for the kids from Pickery's. But then again, like I'm saying, come in. Next door, I think. I don't know. I think that would be real beneficial for the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
Hearing that. But then again, like I'm saying, they hear it, sure, in Pickery's, but then, you know, they're not real concerned about learning the language. They're just waiting for the English. You know, it's been stressed to them that it's important, but then there's no feedback going on at home, and I think the community has to be involved somehow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think they need a bridge to help them get, you
yeah.
know, really into it. You just can't.
Because I feel sometimes like I'm just stuck in mud and I'm just spinning my wheels and I'm not really getting anywhere and
mm-hmm.
I really get frustrated.
I bet you do, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's a hard position to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So in the oral tradition class, they talked about stories? I mean,
mm-hmm.
did he
mm-hmm.
talk about it in terms of school programs?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And I did do, you're supposed to do a story, and of when you were small that you heard, that you remember, you know,
uh-huh.
traditional story. And I did one on tape, but I didn't bring it with me because I want the children to listen to it.
Yeah.
Just at least listen to it. They don't have to really know what's, you know, being said. But they were telling me that later on maybe you can have an activity to go along with it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you did on tape, did you do it in Pickery's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, did you take any other classes?
And then I took phonology class.
Okay, how'd you do in that?
Well,
it's hard, isn't it?
I got a B.
Oh, good. Well, that's good.
And then I had to do like the phoneme system and all that of what I thought, you know, was in Pickery's. I could have done a lot of research, but I didn't want to. I just figured, just like the language was never written, you know, that's how I took it.
Yeah, yeah.
And what else did I take? Oh, and a lab to go with that.
Uh-huh.
And then I took a problems course, you know, dealing with Indian programs and Indian education.
Oh, okay.
And then I took another class, a dual language class, but I didn't get nothing out of that.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
It was just, I guess, for if you want to go into bilingual, that to get your bilingual certification or whatever.
Yeah. You know. Okay. What about who taught the one on problems?
Her name is Dr. Sandra Johnson. She's from Arizona, I think. This is her third year at Sona.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
And then I don't know if you know Valquette Hilaire.
Yes.
Yeah. So I took that phonology class.
Ah, okay. Yeah, he's worked with, is it Laguna?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still trying to...
Work with Laguna, huh?
Well, they have their program, but their funding and everything, their dictionary going, which it didn't go through.
Oh, it didn't? Yeah.
It didn't go through. So he was real upset over that. So that's mainly where I'm at.
Okay. All right. Well, that helps. I mean, we all help us get some ideas about what, you know, what we want to where we want to go.
And then, like, when you discuss something like the writing part about just, you know, writing the writing part of all this, it seems like everybody's like, you know, real leery about it or. Like it's never been written before, and you know they just freeze to the thought.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, "Well, how are we gonna do it, or who, or what's gonna happen, or whatever." And I'm kind of, you know, in that phase where, well, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, or I don't know if I should be doing this, and I don't know if just because the districts, but really. Pickery's don't really know what they want, or they don't really know where they're going.
I was going to say, what is your feeling about the village, people in the village, like the, you know, do you think that they are interested? Do you think that they don't really know what it's all about? Do you think, you know, I mean, how much input have they had into the program?
No input.
No input. Yeah.
But then, like I'm saying, you know. Let's say they're to contact the governor now. He'll want to know really what you're doing. And then they'll say, well, I don't think, you know, this is possible or whatever, you know. And then I think that's where the children, like, feel it, and they feel it's not important, you know. They feel it's not important, so they say, I don't want to learn it. I'm not too interested, you know. Because their parents, you know, they have that feeling, you know. That's how I see it, living over there.
Yeah. And that's important to have your perspective, you know, because I think you're very right. It's going to depend on, you know, the support.
If the
kids, you know, feel at home that it's something important that they need to do, they're going to be more inclined to learn it rather than if they don't, you know.
I don't know if Cora mentioned to you, but like about 3 years ago, I think they did have, I thought it was a pretty good program because... Uh-huh. My husband doesn't speak Pickery's, and he's half Pickery's and half Navajo. He don't speak Navajo either. But they had a program going in Pickery's to where the elders like Cora and Francis and Pat and somebody else were teaching this young kids and adults that didn't know Pickery's the language. And it was being held every day. And I mean, my husband was really learning, you know.
Really?
He was really learning. And it just got, they went regularly for like about a month.
Uh-huh.
Then I guess it got to the point to where there was no interest. This, you know, the elders felt like, these kids don't care, you know. And then it just started dwindling. People weren't coming, you know. And then all this federal bureaucracy that goes along with it, you know, somehow was tied in with it, where these people, I guess, everybody thought they were doing it voluntarily, but they were getting paid, okay? And then where they weren't getting paid and the kids weren't interested and everything just dwindled, you know? And then that's how, I don't know how it tied in, but that's how I got hired, not from the tribe, but
over
the
here.
District.
Yeah,
I tell my husband, I says, no, I really see what you mean, you know. There's really no care. I says, even with the kids, you know, they just go in there and they'll sit there. Even though, and I have observed them in their regular classrooms, you know, it's like they're just there to be there, but they're not there to even learn their regular subjects. And these kids are really doing bad. There's only about maybe two or three that are pretty well.
Well, what about, did you have a chance to go to any of those classes when they had them at the village with the elders?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Do you know how they were doing it? Maybe you know, they were successful for the time that they worked, like with your husband. Did he say how they were trying to teach it? What they did?
It was just, they never did, like they never did show a picture of an animal or anything.
Yeah.
It was just oral verbalization, that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And just, he said that they never talked in sentences, it was just word for word.
And
my husband has never had phonetics and all that. And
right,
and he wrote it how he heard it, and, you know, not to where he's an expert speaker now, but to where at least he understands. But he said, being that, you know, an adult and the kids, you know, were expected to do certain things, and he says, they would just sit there and giggle, and, you know, he said it would get you mad being, you know, an adult or whatever. You know? And I told him, well, didn't they separate you? And he says, yeah, they did, you know, but you could just hear them, you know. And he said, that's how come, I guess, these people just got so frustrated and said, the heck with it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I told him that's how I feel sometimes, you know, with his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I don't, you know, care, or not that I don't enjoy working with them. It's just that there's no feedback going on at home, you know. And a lot of times, like when there's problems, a lot of times the parents never come to me. But I do hear say, well, let Tina take care of it. She works over there, you know.
Yeah.
Why doesn't she deal with it or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they don't understand that you can only do so much.
But then they don't support me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But that's where it's at.
Yeah. What, do you have any feelings about what would impress the parents most, that if their kids, I mean, are there certain kinds of things that would really help, you know, make the parents feel good, like if the kids learned how to say certain kinds of things? I mean, maybe doing body parts and colors isn't that important. But what about something that would really, you know, deal with, let's say, greetings and showing respect and that sort of thing? Do you think that would be helpful?
Yeah, they've learned that.
Do they know that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I guess just daily conversation, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not just saying, you know, simple words,
right,
know, but really speaking it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And like the main concerns the elders have is that when we do go, you know, down to the kiva, that these kids don't even know when they're told to stand up or whatever. And they do know those things, but it's just, I don't know what it is that, why they don't want to respond, because, you know, I've taught them that total physical response, and they do know all that. But it's just, I don't know what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Because they do know that, you know, I did teach them, you know, simple greetings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
Manners and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do, and, you know, I mean, they understand it, but can they say it themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could
say
to each other or whatever, stand up and sit down and all that sort of stuff. Okay. probably, I imagine there's not a whole lot of real storytelling going on at the village now. Is there any opportunity for that?
Well, before I came on board, I talked to a lot of these teachers here, and they were telling me that I guess they used to have people coming in from Pickeries to tell stories, and they used to pay them like $10 an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just for the Pickeries kids or for all the kids in the school. I don't know. But I talked to this guy like Andy now, and they said, well, we don't have no money for, these people to be coming in. But I feel, it's important, as long as the kids are listening to the language, even though, like I said, they may not know what's being said. And nowadays, people aren't willing to do things voluntarily like that. Then, talk about money, they won't come,
I think that's very true.
But then yet, they want the kids to, be speaking the language, but they're not doing their part, their share.
So it seems that my sense is that many of the parents aren't teaching the language of the kids. What about when they get to be like teenagers and they start, participating in things? Do they start learning it then? Or do you think they're not doing that anymore? It seems in the past they did. I noticed that they didn't learn it when they were young, but when they got to start, dancing and everything, that they would start learning it. And you don't think that's happening anymore?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because I have a cousin. My folks kind of like raised him since he was small. And when they would talk to him, he would understand and he would respond back in Pickeries. He knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But he's 14 now, and I think it's just growing up, something he's going through being a teenager, that when we do talk to him in the language, he responds in English. And I was talking to some people, asking them, well, he hasn't forgotten the language. It's just something he's going through that he knows it, he can always rely back on it. It's just maybe he was made fun of or something. I don't know.
But yeah.
That's the only thing I can see, with the young kids. But a lot of these young kids that are growing up, they don't know the language.
Yeah, because I was thinking if they're, if we could figure out how it happened, if they did it as teenagers, how it would happen, how they were learning it, that might help give us an idea, about how it might work to teach it.
Pause.
Oh, okay.
Would you suggest that
thank you.
I continue going to Silma? Because I don't know. I really don't get nothing out of it.
If you don't.
But then what if they're saying, what if they're telling me, well, I have to or whatever, that's sort of some of the guidelines or whatever, because I feel I don't get nothing out of it. I mean, I take a lot of courses here, and I think I get more out of it, dealing with children anyway. And like this year, the only thing that was different was that problems course and that dual language course. And everything was just like about the same as last year. The only thing was that I took more hours. But like if they're telling me that it's for like for funding purposes or whatever.
Well, I think if you could, it seems to me that if you could make a suggestion to them saying, well, look, this is what's more helpful to me. The kinds of courses or, whatever it requires, whether, you want me to come out or whether you want to work with somebody else or whether you think some other kind of course, not Selna, but something else would be more helpful or some other kind of consultant. Mm-hmm. I think if perhaps you suggest, you suggest something concrete instead of, you might be more successful. That might be helpful. That's one, one thing to think. But I think again, they don't know. I mean, it oftentimes sounds like it's the appropriate thing, but mm-hmm. once you have the experience and mm-hmm. and decide what you're going to get out of it, mm-hmm. Then I think, like when you did the phonology course, was that mostly general kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you were supposed to take the general and then work on your own language.
We didn't even get to work, touch nothing on the Pickwish language.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how come everybody was all frustrated about saying, I'm not coming back to Silna because we never did get to cover our own language.
Yeah.
And it was just a language that's really written, which is the Navajo language. What are we going to get out of the Navajo language?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think, you know, like I said, I that's why I was wondering, if you got much of it, because I know other people that went and
yeah.
felt very much the same way.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, if your purpose was just to study the language like mine, you
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, I'm not trying to teach it, I'm trying to just study it and understand
yeah.
it and learn about it,
yeah.
that's different. That's what I think a place like Silna is good for,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you want to be a linguist. But if not, you know, as I said, you know, there's a question about how helpful is it to somebody who doesn't need to know all the, you know, the specific details of phonology,
mm-hmm.
but who needs to know enough about
mm-hmm.
what's important about their own language, okay, to be able to you know, work with it, either
mm-hmm.
in teaching or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So far, you haven't really identified anybody that would be coming on. Is there any possibility that if they hired somebody that you would switch positions? You know, that you would be able to work directly with the kids and somebody else would do the kind of things that you're doing now? Or would you rather not have it that way?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I'd rather have it the way I have it now.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, if Margaret can't do it, who else? Do you have some ideas for people that would be able to, you think, be able to work with the kids?
Well, I gave some names to
okay.
Andy, but I don't know what, you know, they say or how they...
Yeah. Did you already mention it to them that they
no.
might? No. Okay. So you're not sure how interested they would be
mm-hmm.
or whatever, yeah. Okay.
But just, you know, speaking the language and feeling that they have a lot of, you know, background knowledge of the language and
mm-hmm.
the culture, I think.
Yeah.
That would be a big help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that the, like what you did teach them about, you know, the being polite and respectful and all that, do you think the kids ever use that when they're at home?
When they're with me, they do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I think they do.
Yeah.
I think they do.
So you maybe say that was successful, that part
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I think they just, the elders and the parents, I think, just really want them to be speaking the language. But the parents just aren't taking the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
to teach them. They feel, I don't know, like, I tell my husband, I says, if, you know, I had kids, I think, you know, I would teach them a language, but then, yeah, I would teach them English because they have to deal with a greater
sure.
society,
sure.
you know.
Yeah,
but then,
they need to know
I,
both.
Then I think, like a lot of the parents at home, you know, a lot of these kids are graduating and they're not really going anywhere. They're just staying there, you know. So to me, it would be more practical for them to learn the language,
mm-hmm.
feeling that they're going to stay there, it
yeah.
seems like.
Uh-huh,
you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I don't think there's any question. They have to learn English, you know. That's
yeah,
something
yeah,
that whether
yeah.
they like it or not
yeah.
or anybody thinks, because they do have to deal with the outside world, okay? But the question is, you know, the Pickeries, and it seems to me that it would make sense, you know, for them to learn it because, after all, they're going to be the ones that are going to have to take over, you know, the responsibility
mm-hmm.
for the tribe and the government and, you know, taking on those roles. So that is going to be important. See, one of the problems I see with some of that is, and this is where, you know, you could help or somebody from the village could help, is, you know, I could see, for example, maybe talking about the structure of your government. But see, I don't know how much the village would get upset about that.
In that problems course, I had to do a paper, okay?
Uh-huh.
And it was supposed to be pretending that you're the teacher.
Yeah.
And if you were the teacher, how are you going to set up your classroom?
Uh-huh.
if you are a bilingual teacher, and what are some of the areas or subjects that you're going to teach your kids about your community?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and on mine, I indicated, I think I have it in my car. I don't have it in this thing.
Yeah.
But it's in another folder. I indicated on there that I would teach the kids the roles of tribal government, you know, what each position holds and what mm-hmm. do they do, what responsibilities do they have as an elected official, as an individual, and as a member. But then I thought about it later on, would I be getting myself into trouble, or is it something that these kids really need to learn mm-hmm. in order to survive there at the community?
Right, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's as far as I got, and I thought that was of importance to yeah. me, you know.
Right. What is your feeling? Do you think that they would object to doing something like that?
Well, see, like last year, I was telling Margaret that these kids, you know, were coming to me and like we were learning, we were teaching them like different dances and stuff like uh-huh. that, and they picked up pretty good, you know, like we practiced with them like maybe for half an hour, the last half hour on Wednesday uh-huh. because we're gonna be involved in our dance festival, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they did learn, you know, the dances, you know, fairly well. Of course they've been doing them at Picurisma.
Yeah.
And there would be times when the kids, you know, would come to me and they say, we're bored. We don't like doing what, you know, we're doing with Margaret. It's the same old thing. And then, when are you going to come and, you know, teach yeah. us or whatever? I says, I have other things to do, you know. And I would, you know, kind of tell Margaret and I tell my boss to see if they could get some activities for her because I just don't, you know, have the time, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I was telling Margaret, I says, I think these kids need more hands-on. They really need to really see what's there at Picarese. They just live there, I said, but they don't know their responsibilities. Maybe even what their own parents do. They work in that tribal office, but they don't know what their parents
sure.
do, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was telling Margaret, I says, if you really want me to, I says, I can contact the governor's office and you can take a field trip to Picarese
mm-hmm.
and then you can explain to the kids that this is what a certain person does and mm-hmm. this, you know, and this person can explain to them what they really do or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it never came about, you know. Maybe even, you know, take them to the ruins. Maybe they, even yeah. living there, maybe they don't even know what was there before. They don't even know the history, you know.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, see, that to me is the better way to teach the language, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about, to get them interested, to say, you know, do you know why those runes are up there,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then to go back and reconstruct the history, what life was like
mm-hmm.
for Picarese people, you know, back, you know, early on,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because, I mean, Picarese played a major role in the Pueblo Revolt.
And then play your way from way back history up to the present.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, that's what I was trying to get her to do, you know, but
yeah.
I just couldn't get her to thinking my way or what I wanted, and
mm-hmm.
I had so many things going, you know, that
yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah, well, maybe there's you know, something we can do. Maybe, you know, maybe it's because she didn't quite know how to go about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think sometimes that's it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I see as another difficulty is that, you know, we need to bring in people from the village, but they don't have the training
mm-hmm.
to work in a classroom. They have the knowledge about it, the language
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
life in the village,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it takes, I mean, let's face it, Spanish teachers, Anglo teachers, they go for years to college to learn how to work in a classroom,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, with the Indian people, they want to pull them right out of the village and stick them in the classroom and say, now you do it,
mm-hmm.
without the training.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think what I could see my role, Tina, is to try to help develop those things, you know,
mm-hmm.
in conjunction with, because see, rather than just coming and saying, let's say colors, but to talk about, then you could introduce the terms, you know, what's the Indian word for the ruins? How do they call those ruins, you know? You know, the roundhouse and all those sorts of things. Now, again, what I don't know about is what is going to be too sensitive, you know, I mean, what the tribe might get upset about. But you know, maybe if it's you or somebody from the village doing it, maybe that's okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's something you have to work out. And I mean, I could help you with, you know, writing the words and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you did something like really spent the year developing the history, mm-hmm. you know, the kids can get interested in which, you know, you can give them hands-on assignments, you know, to say, you know, do a map of the ruins, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe get them to talk about, you know, what how life was different at that time for the Indian people. How do they go about making a living, mm-hmm. you know? So that there's a lot of spin-off activities mm-hmm. one can do with that, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you know, sort of doing what a teacher would do, developing some vocabulary, you know, do you know what the people called? Maybe a way of trying to get the parents involved, too, is maybe having the kids go back and ask their parents, mm-hmm. you know, to say, you know, tell me about, you know, if there's some kind of assignment, maybe the older kids, you know, you might be able to say, you know, what we want you to do is to go home and talk to your parents mm-hmm. and see what they remember or what they told their grandmas or grandpas told them about, you know, going off into the plains buffalo hunting mm-hmm. or, you know, the times when the Apaches used to come and mm-hmm. camp on the reservation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole bunch of things there that I think that you could really develop. And I think what the secret is to try to really develop some excitement about it. You know, that the kids really want to learn, not just coming in and memorizing a bunch of words. But, you know, maybe to do... No, the other question I had is, do they give you any space? You know, remember everything last time you didn't have any space to work? I mean, can you set up, you know, materials someplace? And
no.
Can you set up projects? That's another problem.
Because I'm still stuck in that little room and have therapists coming in. I have stuff on the wall and then take them off.
Yeah, so there's no kind of permanent space for you to set up. I wonder if they can convert this room for you.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't know. I've been asking every
mm-hmm.
chance I get, but that's all they keep on telling me.
Yeah.
So.
Is there somebody still on the school board from the village?
Mm-hmm.
Who's that? Is that still Pat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I've been complaining to him, you know, whenever I get a chance.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's, I think, basically what the kids need is more things that are more relevant to their
mm-hmm.
environment, I think.
Yeah, right, you know. Now, did you ever have a chance? Remember we were trying to work on a map last time with the different places? Did you?
I got it started, but I never get finished.
Okay, yeah.
And... see, the problem with the people in Pickeries is I get them real excited about the job and everything,
mm-hmm.
and I brainstorm as to what I want done and everything, and they're not too reliable and dependable, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then I get them, you know, here and everything, which I think is a big step and jump for them. You know, for me it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, that just getting them here, being that there's not much employment back home.
Right, yeah.
You know, and here... I got Cora's grandson here, Ronald.
Oh, yeah.
Being that he's a good artist and everything. And I guess once I got him to where I really got him scared or whatever, thinking, this is what I want you to do, and next this. I guess he just couldn't
maybe
take
too
it.
Much, yeah.
You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah, just kind of go one step at a time.
Yeah, you know, and
yeah.
I think I kind of scared him away. So
oh, yeah.
You know,
well, these are all the things one has to learn,
yeah,
you know, what you can... how far you can go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you learn that it's just better to take it one step at a time, you know. And once they have the experience and they find out it's not so bad, and they might even have enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
they might be then, you know, willing to consider coming back the
mm-hmm.
next time,
mm-hmm.
you know. But that's all things that one has to learn, you know.
But I thought I was pretty lenient.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, that's how I was telling Andy, that's Mr. Torres, that's how I felt about Margaret. That's one of the reasons she probably didn't want to come back. Because I was giving her positive criticism, you know, of what
mm-hmm.
I saw, you know. And
yeah.
But I think, you know, we should take this route instead of this route, you know.
Yeah.
I think the kids would do better, or, you know, listen to you better, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
be in tune, you know, to the whole situation better and stuff like that. Maybe I'm the one that scared her off. I don't know, by... telling her all that, I don't really know.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's hard to know that, yeah.
Because, like, you know, there's certain things that they, you know, the federal government wants you to do, and you have to keep up with, you know, You know how that goes.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, yeah.
And they're telling you you need this certain things by a certain time, and, you know.
Yeah, right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the idea of pursuing, you know, this idea of what life was like before Europeans came, you know, at the time, and you know, and then that would bring in the government. You could talk about government. You could talk about, you know, the kind of daily activities, how they made a living, you know, what women did, what men did, all about the farming, you know.
Excuse me, yeah. Amy. But then again, it would have to be conducted in English, right?
Well,
because like I said, you know, you completely lost them already.
Right. No, you don't want to do it all in Indian. You can't. Yeah. Okay. But what I'm thinking about is really talking in English, but start introducing Picarese little by little. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm thinking is, I haven't really thought this all out, but in other words, let's suppose you start talking about, you know, hunting, for example.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And, you know, you could talk about, I mean, you know, bring in what they hunted and what groups they used to go off with, if you know that. Or you could ask the kids to get stories, you know, I mean, from their grandpas or grandmas or anybody who remembers, you know, what that was like,
mm-hmm.
who still remembers. I mean, it's getting a lot of the old people I know would be the only ones that would be able to tell them that now.
Mm-hmm.
But then to them to come in and then sort of try to start building, you know, well, do you know what they called, you know, this place where they went or you know, what happened, how did they prepare to go hunting, and, you know, what happened when they came back, and then sort of start talking about what they called them in Indian, you know, sort of bringing the cultural thing in, working from the cultural
mm-hmm.
to the language
mm-hmm.
so that you could talk about and say, well, you know, maybe they could do like a mural
mm-hmm.
or something. Where they did, and then out of that, you know, develop some vocabulary lessons,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, or let me see, what are the language things? You know, if there are sort of, you know, expressions or kinds of things they would say to each other when they were going off hunting or when they came back,
mm-hmm.
and maybe set a scene for, you know, how they would sit down and share the stories
mm-hmm.
about what happened, you know, something like that to create it and build it up. I wouldn't push, you know, too much
mm-hmm.
the language because they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have to sort of start, you know, think of it more as introducing the language
mm-hmm.
at appropriate times
mm-hmm.
because I think, you know, you're not going to get them from straight English
mm-hmm.
into straight Picarese. I think that's unrealistic,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, though, by bringing in, you know, what goes on and you know, what still remains in the village, you know, what is a continuation of the way life used to be. Obviously, lots of things changed.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to talk about, well, you know, what is still, you know, unique or Indian about our culture is, number one, our form of government. And say, well, do you know how, you know, our government differs
mm-hmm.
from, let's say, what goes on in Santa Fe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, but yet bring in the perspective that, you know, we're citizens of the United States. You know, we have the rights as citizens. We, you know, we're entitled to vote and, you know, the armed service and all that, if you want, you know, depending on the age level. But in addition, we have our own Indian way of doing things. We have our own Indian government.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the officers are. You know, you, in a sense, what I'm thinking about is getting the kids to try to get that information,
mm-hmm.
you know, bring it in. And then we could say, okay, let's maybe do, you know, let's do a big chart showing what the different people are. Who are they? You know, who's governor this year? What do we call governor in Indian?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And I mean, that way, you know, not so much worrying about them writing it down, but, you know, to do a chart and put the, you know, to say Governor Tapone and, you know, those sorts of things, and listing it to show. And even if they don't pick up writing it,
mm-hmm.
for them to see it as a help in remembering what it is,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is the school much involved, or are you familiar with, you know, language experience approach, where they're what they do is they have kids write their own stories, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
the
that
whole language
even if it's
or something.
Yeah, whole language, even if you do it in English, Okay, and then, but get them to refer back to the things that that become important for Indian. You know, you know, to do something like a calendar of Indian events. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to say, well, you know, January 6th is an important day for us. And you know, if you think about it more in terms of, rather than kids coming into the classroom, sitting there passively as you tell them things, I think it might help to get them to do it. You know what I mean? To say, you know, what we want to do is we want to know about what life was like. What was it like to be an Indian, you know, way back when, before, you know, Spanish people came in? What was life like? You know, and let's look at some of the things we're going to, let's say, study it this year and say, one of the things we want to know is, you know, what did it look like? What did the village look like? And then maybe get them, you know, interested in how are we going to find this out, you know? Does anybody have any idea where we're going to find out what, you know, how the Picarese people used to live, you know? For the older kids, again, you might be able to get them even into sort of trying to read some books or, you know, do a little bit of research. I know somebody by, I think one of the things that I brought last time, that little book by Schroeder, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the history of Picarese, might be something, because, I mean, you know, Picarese was one of the big, spectacular pueblo, you know, 5-6 stories. Mm-hmm. And so you could even say maybe, you know, to go back, and that's where you introduce the ruins. You know, what are those ruins up there? You know, you live with them and you go up there. What was that all about, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, there were all these stories and balconies and everything else, and you know, and then maybe compare, you know, how does the village differ today? Mm-hmm. You know, how much is the same? One time there were 6 kivas going at Picarese, and 6 or 7, I think, I can't remember, I think it was 6. But you know, that this and you know, mention, well, how many do we have today? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Give them the word, and as I said, I wouldn't put the emphasis on the language. I think, as you said, I mean, it seems to me that's kind of running into a blind alley, you know, but try to put the emphasis on an understanding of who they are, you know, because I think the other problem you're facing is that what you have to do is, in a sense, build up mm-hmm. a sense and a respect of what it means to be Indian, mm-hmm. not just the bad stuff that they're learning, you know, from other kids mm-hmm. or the attitudes they pick up. But I think it's hard when you say to kids, it's important. They don't, what does that mean? Why is it important? You know? So what I'm thinking is maybe building, you know, thinking about as a year project in which you give them something that they could really relate to and really come to be proud of, mm-hmm. you know? And then, I mean, maybe it's going to, I think it's going to take a long time, if it's ever going to do anything. Mm-hmm. To build up a sense of, first, you know, yeah, I'm an okay person, you know, this is part of my heritage. I mean, it's still going today, you know, after 300 years mm-hmm. when we've been forced, mm-hmm. you know, to be part of the dominant society. But what is it that we've hung on to as Indian people that makes us special and different and all that? But yet, you know, we share with the outside world lots of things too. Mm-hmm. But and I think if you build up that, maybe it's going to take a whole year to build up, and they have a sense of what contributions mm-hmm. they make, and that when they look at the village, it's not just a bunch of ruins that don't have any meaning, mm-hmm. but that represents for them, you know, really part of their heritage, part of their, you know, a tradition they can be very proud of, mm-hmm. you know. And then, like I said, you could build it up to the 1680 revolt. You know, the part, the Picarese, a lot of that was planned at Picarese. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could be something else. And then there was a period after the Pueblo Revolt when people left the village, mm-hmm. you know. And, I mean, I tried to reconstruct what happened at mm-hmm. those people. I think that's when Picarese really dropped in population, you know. But some of it was, you know, going off to live with the Apaches for a while and being enslaved and then, you know, asking mm-hmm. to come back. Part of it, they were captured by Spanish, and they were, you know, the women and children were distributed among the Spanish. There's some records of that. So it would be a way of bringing in history, mm-hmm. but it also would be a way of bringing in heritage, and it would be a way of bringing in even what's going on today, mm-hmm. you know, without getting a real lot, you know, a whole lot into the religion, which, you know, is best left, you know, in the village. But the idea of, you know, what are the important ceremonies or days, you know, festivals and times of the year, you know, maybe at some level you could even talk about, you know, the spring picnic and, you know, all that sort of stuff, not getting too much into the religious parts of it, but just as something that, you know, an event that happened. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, getting into the government and what is it that the government has to do today? Because, see, I think that's something that my sense is that it's very frustrating for many people in the village who haven't been on the tribal council. What are the demands on the tribal council today? You know, it's not just taking care of the Indian things, but all the red tape and the bureaucracy and the proposals. You know, so although it still exists and they have functions that are very traditional, they have new responsibilities and demands, which I think that would be important for them to learn about. You know, what are their responsibilities and what does it mean to be on the council? You know?
But I think that, you know, a lot of these parents, I think they, if they are on the council or mm-hmm. they do work there at the administration, they talk so badly about the traditional part, and then they don't explain to their kids that tradition and administration are two separate things, where they try to tie them in together and they'll never work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how come I think the kids are so feel backwards about, you know, the mm-hmm. language, mm-hmm. saying, well, it's not important, you know, I mean, my parents are always saying, you know, bad things, and
yeah.
I don't think it's all that great or all that important to learn it
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it may be that, you know, if there's going to even be any kind of program, it seems to me maybe the focus has to be trying to build that base, you know, of respect again. That there is something to be proud of. There is something to respect. There is something. You know, and then you could even get into, you know, what kinds of responsibilities, you know, they might want to think about as becoming adults, you know, if they're going to stay here. You know, if they ever are asked to be governor or whoever, what would they do? How, you know, what would they, what is that going to mean? You know, again, these are just some ideas that you might have to adjust, you know, according to, you know, what the real interests are and stuff. But I think within that you could do a lot of hands-on things, you know. It may be that certain areas, I mean, the ruins would be one place, you know. But it may be something about, let's say, a trip to the ranchos, you know, I mean, for a time period where that may have been important, you know. They may do a timeline. You know, so that there are a whole bunch of activities. And again, I wouldn't force it being in Pickery's because, as I said, I think it's too foreign to them. You know, it's too, they don't know enough to really do enough with a language strictly. You've got to start, I think, just sort of, in a way, inserting it at the right moments, okay, might be one way of thinking about doing that, okay? Because it sounds to me like, Tina, that even if they bring somebody on, they're not going to be probably very knowledgeable about what to do. So if anything, you might have to sort of be the leader in terms of instructing them about what ideas, you know, where they might want to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, see what kind of materials could be gathered to talk about that. And we'll see, what I'm thinking is that if you get kids to start being actively asking questions, that might help sort of turn around the attitudes of the adults mm-hmm. who feel like, eh, kids don't care anymore. You know, they don't want to know. But if you can get them sort of interested in the school mm-hmm. such that they, you know, go home and say, yeah, you know, I'm going to go home and ask my grandpa, you know, what did he do when he was a boy? How do they make, you know, how do they get, what do they eat, and how do they, you know, make a living? Did he ever go hunting?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did the women do? You know, you might be able to get, you know, sort of build that and sort of, you know, envision your role or the teacher's role as not there giving lectures mm-hmm. or not just saying this is what you have to learn,
mm-hmm.
but helping them find answers to questions. You know, to be a resource for kids. And then that way the kids get involved and they can't help but get involved and they start learning things. And I think the secret is once they start learning a little bit, then that starts building their interest. Mm-hmm. Now, so that would be my suggestion about just a general, you know, approach and where they might want to go. Because, you know, there are, and I think you're very well aware of, what are some of the major problems. I mean, it's hard to convince kids that, yeah, it's important to learn to read, and then they sit there and say, but what is there to read? Why do I have to read it? You know, why? What is this stuff, you know? I mean, if I can get in English, why do I have to go through all that trouble to learn a new language for them, you know, to try to read something when it's easier to read it in English? And that's a legitimate thing, you know? I mean, kids make sense in terms of what they do. But I think, as I said, even if you start as much more of a cultural, I think it would, like I said, I think it would do lots of things. It would help build that sense in the kids of that this is something that's important and interesting. And at the same time, if they show, go home and start asking the right kinds of questions and get, you know, the adults interested in remembering and telling them, I think it'll make them more willing to participate too, to show, hey, these kids, you know, seem interested. They're not just ignoring all this stuff anymore. You know, that works. I mean, I found that even my working at Pickery's, you know, me asking questions got people interested in things again. You know, got them thinking about things that they didn't think about in a long time. A lot of which they were beginning to forget, you know. And, I mean, even working with people like Pat, you know, you go, oh, yeah, remember, you know, it's a hard time trying to remember. It was a long time I thought about those things, you know. So, but by getting them to think about them again, it comes up, you know. So I would say just in general, that might be the way to think about it. And then think about activities. And then we could think about where it would be important, you know, where you could start inserting it. Because once they start learning, you know, some vocabulary about it, you know, they know what to call those things. They know that if they hear somebody using the Indian word for the ruins, they'll know what it means. You know, and then I don't know how much, I mean, maybe some of these kids, and this is what I don't know, maybe sort of have an understanding but not speak the language. You know, they may be. So that's sort of tapping into that understanding. And that maybe even, you know, when they get to be older, that will be enough of a base for them to try to go. Because, yeah, I suspect what's going to happen as this generation grows up, I have a feeling that they're going to want to, as adults, say, well, you know, I never learned the language. Maybe I should know something about it. You know, that usually what happens oftentimes when it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, like even your husband, you know, being here. I mean, that interest that he has, mm-hmm. he didn't know it. But you know, as an adult, you feel like I should know something about this. I want to know something. Mm-hmm. So this what we're going to try to maybe do is build a base for them.
Amy, I was going to ask. Would it be appropriate, like, let's say now in the fall, to teach them things that we did, like, in the fall? And, like, yeah. How long would you think would be appropriate to stay on a certain lesson to where they get it, you feel? To where, I mean, yeah. Even if they're thinking in English, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Now, I do. I think that one thing, I mean, it's in one way it makes it real hard, but in another way it gives you an advantage, Tina, that mm-hmm. that you, the state isn't saying you have to, you know, work mm-hmm. on Pickery stuff. This one. You really should go with it as long as the interest is there. You know what I mean? If you get on something that the kids get real excited about, suppose it has to do with, you know, the traditional, you know, what life was like for Pickery's people, you know, and you find that it's working, kids are interested, they're asking questions, they're doing it. If it takes you all year to do that, do it, you know? But I wouldn't, I think, as I said, you have the advantage in that there's nothing set, you know? Mm-hmm. It's wide open. Mm-hmm. So I think you've got the advantage of doing as little or as much as you want. And if it's working, because remember, your objective is not to say that at the end of the year I covered 20 lessons. I think your objective are more general, I think, it's to say that try to start building that interest back again. You know, just to get them to know something, to get them to learn who they are and what goes on at that village, mm-hmm. to start preparing them, if they're going to stay here, which probably most of them will, that they won't be ignorant going into these positions and struggle for a whole year, and then they're out and they're in somebody else coming in, that they will have, you know, you're trying to build a sense of their history and their responsibility and what's being asked of them to live in today's world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that if you see that as your objectives, then whatever you do is building to that, you know? And as I said, I mean, if you're working with kids at different grade levels, you know, or different points, we'll start maybe there and to build up that you maybe, you know, year after year, you have a chance to build on that. So if they get a firm grounding, let's say, in traditional life in the village, the way it used to be, and it, as I said, you know, you can get into the baking of bread and the other kinds of foods and what were traditional foods, and then maybe next year you can get into how did life change when the Spanish came in, you know? What did they bring? What did they contribute? You know, what became part of our culture? But see, you then have already established the base of what life was like. And then what were the contributions of the Spanish that came in? And then, you know, what happened when the Anglos came? Did that make a big difference? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, how then maybe later on develop something that would be contemporary problems. You know, what are the problems that Indian people are facing today? Mm-hmm. You know, what is Picaree's facing today? Mm-hmm. You know, you might get into land and water rights and, you know, tribal government and sovereignty and all those things, which may be a more advanced kind of a thing. But you might, like I said, really start building that, you know, so that the school program then becomes a base for these people when they graduate, you know, to start being more knowledgeable mm-hmm. about, you know, where the tribe has been and where it is now and where it wants to go, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, I mean, I know that you're facing a lot of negative things going on, mm-hmm. you know, but it seems to me that one of the first jobs you'll have is always to try to find some way to reverse that, you know, to start getting it going in the right direction. Because if not, it's doomed, you know. Your life is going to be miserable. You're just going to be spinning your wheels, trying to do something, and nobody's interested. And I think, like, you know, as I said, you know, if you got something going and slowly build that interest, not everybody's going to come around real fast. But if you can get kids to become interested, and then they start showing interest, and then their parents might start becoming interested again. Because mm-hmm. One thing we find about people, and I think, you know, Indian people are very much the same way too, that once they get talking about things, they enjoy talking about them. You know, a lot of that stuff. It's memories for a lot of them. But I think it's sometimes, you know, good for them to think about and talk about those good old days and to see that, yeah, there's some interest, and these kids want to know these things. Mm-hmm. I know I was the same way. I grew up, my mother came from another country. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't care as a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it was, why are they talking that funny language with our relatives, you know? I didn't care. I learned to say, you know, how are you, and that was about it. And then it was when I started getting to be older, I began to say, well, yeah, I mean, where did these people come from, and what was life like, and why did they come here, mm-hmm. you know? So as an adult, you start asking these questions, and I suspect that's what's going to happen. So in a way, if you can get the program, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think you should have two terribly big goals, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not where the Navajos are at. The Navajos have had lots of support, mm-hmm. you know. They've had centers developing materials for them. They've had people working on curriculum for them. They've had people working on their language for years and years and years and years. It doesn't take any less work to do Picaree's, but you don't have the resources, mm-hmm. you know. Your student body is too small. You don't have the trained help, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that your goals need to be much more modest than they are. So I wouldn't even try to compare. That's why I was curious about, you know, Silnan, how helpful it was to you, because you're not in the same place, mm-hmm. you know? And so you've got to say, what's the situation right now? Mm-hmm. How can I, you know, mm-hmm. what contribution can I make? And I think it's, you know, I think it's very valuable that the insights that you have, you know, I mean, in terms of you tried these things and you see what's working, what isn't working. And I know how frustrating it is when you can't control it, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have the real say-so.
Oh,
good
idea.
Oh, It's okay. Let me see. Do we have a... Oh, I've got a... It won't hold it. That's nice about this tape recorder. You know, you can put it on and let it go, and you don't have to keep changing and stuff. So, I thought, even though I was a pain to have to drag it on the airplane, I figured I'll just bring my own this time. So, if that kind of sounds good to you, I mean, if that sort of makes sense, and I don't want to talk you into anything, but, you know, whatever. Mm. I mean, you're the one that's going to have to come here every day and deal with this problem. So, as I said, you know, I want you to think of, I mean, I see, as I said, my role here to help you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really care about, you know, all these other people. I mean, they're doing it because they have to, because they wrote into proposal.
Yeah.
But they're not the one that has to deliver. And you are, so like I said, what's going to help you? And they didn't give me any guidelines. I mean, they didn't tell me I have to do this or I have to do that.
Mm.
And I've asked a couple times now, and they said, no, just, you know, work on materials and language. So that's all that they told me. So as I said, that's why when I wrote this up, I mean, I don't even know what's going on, and they asked me to do an agenda.
Mm.
That's why I just said, well, you know, the first, I just wanted to get a sense this morning of, you know, where you're at and what your assessment of things are, and, you know, make some plans about what we should do in the next couple of days.
You want to pause it?
Sure, it's on. Do you have any ideas where you want to start? Well, let me ask this, Tina. Is there anything that you're uncomfortable about writing, if you want to write something down? Is there anything that you want to review or, you know, check out? Or do you feel pretty comfortable? Anything that you want to write down now, you can do. In Pickery's.
I don't feel comfortable writing the language at all.
Okay. And again, you may want to think about the writing as something to, you know, for your purposes,
mm-hmm.
and for something to make available, but not, you know, put the pressure on the kids to learn right away. Okay, as I said, I think you're better off staying with the oral part, you know, trying to build that up and let them see, you know, it's like when they're teaching English or Spanish, this is what they do to introduce language to kids, okay? So they'll put, you know, labels on things and they'll say, so kids just get used to seeing it there, to seeing what it looks like, you know, and associating it with, but not getting necessarily, because that way it becomes too much emphasis on learning these words and how they're written. And I don't think that's what the purpose is, okay?
Yeah, because all they want to learn is through labels.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and that's not going to get them too far, okay? Because, see, one of the things that I was thinking about was, you know, we could talk about that, but maybe something about get a little bit into grammar. You know, things like, you know, do kids know how to say things like, you know, if there's even a need to do this, you know, you know, what are we going to do tomorrow? Or, you know, like getting into the past and the present and the future, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're familiar with that, if that's something worthwhile. Do they know how to do things like talk about, you know, what we call in English prepositions, you know, like to say it's under the table or it's on top of the table, or do they know directions? You know,
mm-hmm.
how do you say going off to the east or the west, or you know, those sorts of things. So I don't know if any of those sound interesting to you or worthwhile
mm-hmm.
For you to understand them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and see what we're doing there. And, you know, maybe use that as a basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, see, when you're teaching English, you know, you want to start off with simple things.
Mm-hmm.
But what's simple in English is not simple in Pickery's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think last time when we were doing the words, we were doing singular and more than one of something.
That's where I have a hard time, difficult time using that, because like the way I say it, like the elders don't say it, but I can still get my message across
sure.
to them.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and that's where Margaret and I used to, well, you know, argue about it. And I
uh-huh.
used to tell her, well, as long as you understand what I'm trying to say, doesn't make any difference whether I'm saying it correct or not. As long as you understand what I'm trying to get across to you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, like, and then the way I heard it, Pat saying it, and the way I heard it the way I read it in Traeger's books and stuff like that, and that's not the way I use it. I use it
okay.
in a different way,
uh-huh.
like for we and maybe they, and depends on the situation. You
sure,
know?
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you can't translate it just.
You know, and then, you know, I think language changes so much that maybe let's say I decided to be a linguist. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Let's say I decided to be a linguist. Maybe in 20 years the language will have changed.
It will.
You know?
It will.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
and that's what the people need to understand too, you know?
Yeah.
Because
right.
there's a big generation gap between Margaret and I, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
mm-hmm.
this is what I picked up when I was growing up. Maybe that's how she learned from her
right.
folks, you
right.
know?
And that's true.
And
that's
then, like, when I, you know, talk to my folks, they never question. They never say, well, you're saying it wrong. This is the correct way. As long as I can communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the important thing.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. See, what happens, I mean, you know, when you have a language like English, we've got books, okay? So it doesn't matter if you're reading those books here in New Mexico. It doesn't matter if you're reading them in Boston
mm-hmm.
or if you're down living in the South and reading those books or in Ohio. The books all stay the same. But the way people sound, you know, somebody that comes from Texas sounds different
mm-hmm.
than somebody that comes from Boston, that sounds different from somebody that comes from New Mexico. Okay, somebody that has a Spanish accent versus one that has an Indian accent. I used to be able to, I don't know if I still can, I could hear Indian people talk and tell you what village they came from. English, not their native language. You could pick Navajos out, okay, the way they speak English.
This one guy, Cotiti, I went to this bilingual conference in April, and I met this guy, and he happened to be at Silna this summer too.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first met him in April at that bilingual conference, he told me, he says, don't tell me where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
I know where you're from.
Oh, yeah?
And then he says, I can tell when I talk to Indian people where they're usually from.
Uh-huh.
But he says, you don't have an accent.
No, so your English is very, yeah.
Told me you don't have an accent,
uh-huh.
so I'm kind of puzzled. And
yeah.
I told him where I was from, and he says, I wouldn't have ever guessed you were from
yeah.
over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But like most Indians, you know, like from the South, how they really
mm-hmm.
talk, you know, their
yeah.
English. And
uh-huh.
he said I could really just spot them out where they're from.
Yeah.
Just by their talking. They're, you know, English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could. I could tell, like, on the phone or something, because
mm-hmm.
Navajos speak English with a lot of sounds
mm-hmm.
in it, you know.
And
pick out the Domingos and
mm-hmm.
the hands. Uh-huh.
Their, even their, like, CL sounds are like the K, probably
uh-huh.
trying to switch it to their language, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
yeah.
where they're doing, like, a lot of, like, code switching, I guess.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Or how do you call
interference,
it?
Interference.
Yeah,
a lot of people call
it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you could pick that out. So, but the thing is, but now that's the way it is in English, and there's standardization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there's this agreed upon spelling. It doesn't matter if you're in New Mexico or Maine or Florida. Cat is C-A-T, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you think about Pickeries, you don't have a writing system. You know, you didn't have a written language. So what happens is, everybody that I think it runs in families. I think that each family at Pickeries speaks Pickeries a little bit differently, you know? And I don't know, I mean, my ear isn't that good anymore, but probably when I was really working at Pickeries, I probably could tell you what family you came from just by hearing the way you spoke. Your Pickeries, okay? Because it's different, you know? And that's why, if I don't know if you got into any of the talk about sociolinguistics, that's why in the whole area of sociolinguistics today, you don't just work with one person. But you have to say, women speak differently than men, you know? People, like I said, in American society, they say people that are upper class versus people that are working class speak differently. People from different regions speak differently. So that, you know, you want to do that. Well, see, that's something that I'd like to do one someday at Pickeries, if I could, okay? I'd really like to have a sense of what are all the different variations and how does it vary? You know, why is it that Margaret says it's not quite right, okay, the way you speak it? And because I noticed, even like when I would work with like Pat and Margaret, and I worked with Cora, it was different. And then sometimes even Cora, when I worked with Ramos, it was a little bit different, you know? And I saw those differences, but I didn't do it systematically. You know, I really wasn't able to get enough information to know it was different. One thing that I did notice that I thought males, men in the village, have a lot more nasal sounds. They sound much more like, you know, sounds to me than women do. So it was easier for me to listen to women than it did for men. You know, so they're the kinds of things. And as I said, I mean, I didn't do a study of that, but I know that that's true. You know, and I think that's what's happening. And part of it is because it wasn't written, so there was no standard. And language is always changing. It's always, every language is. But it's just that when you have a writing system and you have schools teaching it, they tend to make it more alike because they tend to teach it as if it weren't changing. But it is, you know. And I know, like at another village down at Sandia, a friend of mine, what she did was to study the old people and the young people, okay? And the word for hair, for example, the old people went would say pa, pane, or whatever it was, whatever their pane day, I think it was. But the young people were saying fa. Yeah, okay? See, so there you're getting the change, all right? And it was by generation. So that was something that was naturally occurring in the language. And it's not going to be stopped. So a linguist studying a language is only capturing what's going on at that particular time, okay, with those particular people, okay? So even the work that I've done is limited by the people I worked with, you know? Somebody else reading it from the village may be a little, find it very different, you know, because it represents the people I worked with, the way they talk. So I wrote down what I heard, what they said, but that doesn't mean it's going to be the same for other people, you know? And I'm trying to think even, oh, one place I remember a difference was in the word for man. It seemed to me some people were saying sun-nina, and other people were saying sun-nina, almost a U sound. Or there's the word for cat, okay? Some would go moo-sane, and others would go mo-sane, or something. There's a difference there.
Well, like, see, I don't really know if it's su-nene or su-mene.
Okay, yeah, the N and M is another one.
Yeah, you
okay.
know, I...
That switches in Pickering's.
Yeah,
okay.
But then as long, if I were carrying a normal conversation, as long as the person's not going to stop me and say, wait a minute, you know, you're not saying it right or whatever, you know, but...
Right, yeah, right. And the same thing with flower, you know?
Tune.
No, how about, is it, mene, is that right for flour?
No, that's bread.
Bread, okay.
Oh, no. Yeah, oh, flour, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Emon.
Pan.
Pan. Pan. See, some people say pan, another goes pan. See, the N and M.
Yeah.
There are a lot of words in Pickering where N and M switch.
Yeah. Like pottery, molone or molomo.
Okay. Yeah, there's that. And, yeah, and some people were saying, I mean, my early notes, flower, one flower was et mon. And then later on when I asked people, what's one flower, and I get mene.
That's more than one.
Yeah, more than one. But mene.
Bam ene is more than one.
Yeah, more than one.
Bam et mon
is one. Yeah. But you could see changes going on, okay?
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think is changing are the tones, and that's what's hard, okay? It's hard for me to hear them, too, but I think that's what's going on. And I think that's one of the areas where the old people are going to think that the young people aren't saying things right. Because my sense is that the younger people, because of being, you know, a lot of them English speakers, aren't saying tones right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a hard time with tones because they're changing so much.
But, you know... Like, I think it's so true because, like, even like with myself, when I go over to my folks' house, you know, like, I speak 90% of the time English, you know, with my husband here with the kids here at school.
Yeah.
And then only 10% I speak with them, and I don't get out to the village that much to where I converse with a lot of people, you know. But when I go to my folks', you know, home and I talk to them, and then I might say a word, it's reversed, but I know what it means, but, you know, they'll correct me.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, well, you're not saying it right. And I try to say it, but it's like the intonation is
yes,
not...
Yes, that's it. See, that's the tones. Okay. And I mean, there are a few that I think I know what the tones are, like the word for water. Okay. Ani. Is that right? Ani. It's the ah, very low. Bani.
Yeah.
That's very low. See, that's a low tone.
Ani is the moon.
Moon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ani. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think there's even like a falling tone. And I think like, let me see if I can think of a word. The word for house, maybe?
Tuni.
Tuni. Is that right? The tu, uh-huh. It tu comes down. Yeah. And see, where if you just say tone, mm-hmm. it's not going to, it's close, but it's not
yeah.
the same.
Yeah.
So it's that tone mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. going to make a difference,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And see, there are things because that doesn't exist in English,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, not that way. I mean, when we raise our voice, I mean, we have like, are you going? You leave it high.
Yeah.
That means a question.
Yeah.
Are you going?
I mean,
okay.
Ami.
Ami, you're going, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But like with English, if you leave it high at the end of it, it makes it a question. Not in Pigarese,
yeah.
but
yeah.
But in English. So it has a different meaning in English.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that I think would be hard for kids, just like it's hard for a non-speaker to learn.
So like, what was it then, prepositions or whatever, IU, is it the prepositions?
Oh, they're the pronouns.
Pronouns, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like with those ones, like for myself, I, na,
uh-huh.
and you, I,
uh-huh.
and then we.
We would also be na, right? With something else.
That's where I get confused.
Okay, yeah, cause see.
So, okay, like, let's say I was walking.
Uh-huh.
I would
uh-huh.
say, da mi hu. I wouldn't say na da mi hu.
Right. Right.
I would say tamihu, okay. You're going amihu, okay. And we're going anmihu. And then they're going imihu.
Okay.
But then I did a study on that, okay. But then when I compared it to this Traeger's,
mm-hmm.
it was all reversed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the way I'm used to speaking.
Right. But see, house is different enough, okay?
Uh-huh.
So you can't go by that, okay?
And then when I do, you know, like talk to my folks, like
uh-huh.
tell them, how would you say, like, we're walking, you know, and then they say, chike imi, that's where I get the e, I'm correct there. But then, like, when I ask Pat and somebody else, says, no, that's not the way you say it. You know.
Okay,
you know,
uh-huh.
But then... You know, that's where I don't feel comfortable. As long as the people that I'm conversing with, as long as they can get what I'm saying, you know, even if it's correct
yeah.
or incorrect.
Yeah, it's again, you've identified a real problem, okay? And it's not something we can solve,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's only the kind of problem that the community can do. But they can't do it until these other things are done, you know? In other words, it doesn't even raise itself as a question until somebody starts writing things down or working with it, okay? And then that then allows people to say, well, no or yes, okay? But see, they're not, that's a standardization problem, which is true with all unwritten languages. You know, it's only when people start writing it down and saying, this is the way it is. Navajos went through the same thing, okay? Because they would write it down and then they go back to the community and somebody say, no, that's not the way it is. They had to finally come to an agreement of how they're gonna, what they're gonna agree upon, okay?
See, because the reason why I'm saying that is that I'll tell the kids, like, I'll actually tell them, this is the way I say it,
uh-huh.
but then your mom and dad or grandmas or grandpa might say it different. But if you want to, you can learn it this way, but maybe there's another way. And then they'll go
yeah.
back and tell their, whoever they live with, and say, no, that's not the correct way. So that's where I want them to learn the correct way of saying it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't
yeah.
have to say it the way I say it, but
right.
as long as we can communicate.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
And so far you still can't. You know, I mean, you know, you can understand each other. You may not, you know, say it the same. Well, it's the same. I mean, it's the same thing, like, for example, with, I mean, this is an example of speaking English in another language, but a lot of Spanish people, for example, will say, I got new shoes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Or what do you have for dinner? Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not standard to say it that way, but you understand. Okay?
You know, yeah.
You know, that's what identifies them as being a Spanish English speaker. Okay? And that's the kind of thing. So these are problems that are true for all languages.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that once you have it written and you always see C-H-I-C-K-E-N, well then because you see it written C-H, then you could say it's the ch is the right way,
mm-hmm.
not sh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's ch. But see, it's only because that's the way we've agreed upon to write it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But in English, there's also lots of changes going on all the time. I mean, we used to call a refrigerator an icebox. Now we call them refrigerators, you know? So that's, that changes. A word like herb, you know, we used to always say herb, and now people are saying herb. It sounds funny,
mm-hmm.
but it's changing, you know? And lots of people get upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, that's not the way you say it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing you're experiencing, you know,
mm-hmm.
with Pickery's. And again, Tina, I think, you know, if I were in your position, it's a matter of, you know, you could say, well, what are the choices? You could either do nothing, or you could try. And you could say, well, this is an attempt. I'm not claiming it's the only way of saying it. It's the way I say it. It's the way I know it. And then say, you know, if we want a standard way, we have to recognize that there are different ways of saying it in the village, and which way do you want to teach the kids has to be a community decision. You know, it can't be yours. It won't work being yours. So I think it's a matter of...
But yeah, I'm not involved with the community. That's the other thing.
Yeah, yeah. But, it, you know, I mean, if they're going to be concerned about it, the answer is going to have to be, because no matter who did it...
From within.
You know, no matter who did it, if it wasn't you, if it were somebody else, then the way they teach it, your folks are going to say, well, that's not the way we say it, you know? Or Pat's going to say, that's not the way we say it. So it's not a problem you can solve. All you could say is that since I have the responsibility of doing this and I got to do something, I can't teach them and say it's every different way. It's too confusing. Kids say, this is the way I say it, you know, and realize that your parents might say it a little bit differently, and that's okay. There are different ways of saying it.
In second language learning,
mm-hmm.
Why is it that the kids... They won't have the accents, but the adults will. I wonder why that is. Because, okay, like my husband,
okay.
I'll use my husband
yeah.
for an example. My husband grew up in Santa Fe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't learn either Pickery's or Navajo. He just learned, you know, English.
Yeah.
And then when he came here to Pickery's, and within the past 3 years he's been working in Santa Fe, and like when he comes like during the weekends,
mm-hmm.
I notice like he has like a, he works with a lot of Spanish people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he has like a real strong Spanish accent
yeah.
with his English,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I thought, and then I have little cousins that come to school here and they don't have an accent, and they're with the kids all the time, you know, but it's my husband that has the accent.
Yeah.
And he don't realize that, you
uh-huh.
know.
Yeah. Sometimes, for example, when I'm out here long enough and I go back, people think I talk funny. Because when I'm here, I start talking the way people talk. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think adults tend to do that. For example, whatever
Is that
whenever I think of New Mexico,
uh-huh.
okay, and I think of my Indian friends, I mean, not just from here, but from other places, they always say, we had a good time, no? Okay, no, we had a good time. And I go back to them, they look at me, what? What's this no, you know? And when I first came out and people said that, I go, no, yeah, we had a good time. And I was confused, you know. But after a while, when you're interacting with people,
mm-hmm.
you start adjusting to
mm-hmm.
them. You know, you start talking like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed even last night when I was talking to Cora, I started changing things a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get back, they look at me like, where's she from?
You know? Mm-hmm.
And it takes me a while to sort of get back into the Ohio talk again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's in adults too. Kids... Again, may pick up things, but they depends on who their closest friends are, who they interact with all the time. And sometimes kids consciously don't pick it up. A lot of times it seems that what happens is when you like people and when you want to sort of be like them, you're more likely to pick it up.
Because like I have like a lot of kids, well, you know, Indian kids from Pickery's,
uh-huh.
like they'll mock this little Spanish kids, the way they sing and they talk, uh-huh. How are you? And they'll come into class like that, and uh-huh. Are they doing it, to criticize them, or are they doing it because they want to be like them? I really don't know,
yeah.
You know.
I think a lot of times, kids are very smart about language, uh-huh. in a lot of ways. And kids learn to use language to mean different things, okay? In other words, if I came in here and I was working with you and I was using, let's suppose, all linguistic terminology,
mm-hmm.
that would set me apart from you, right? I mean, you would say, oh, God, I don't understand what she's talking mm-hmm. about, okay? And that sets me up, like I'm smart, you can't understand me.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Sometimes people do that. You know, for example, I have a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever talk. My students call me Amy. But when I have a problem with the gas company, and I want to let them know that they better not push me around, okay?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I mean, number one, I look so young and my voice is young.
Yeah.
So when I call them, I say, this is Dr. Zaharlik calling from Ohio State University. I get action, okay? So we come uh-huh. to use language to accomplish a lot of social things.
Uh-huh.
And kids come to use language in order to identify themselves as being a member of certain groups, okay? That's why teenagers talk so weird, okay? Because they're trying to set themselves apart as being unique. And as soon as adults learn how to speak their language, they change it, you see? Because they're trying to, so that for Indian kids, what sounds to me like what's going on, they already are identifying as Indian. They're not the same.
But
and they don't want to identify the same bubble, they'll mock each other.
But then see, like, and then they can really mock,
mm-hmm.
Spanish kids. But then yet, when it really comes, to their culture, there's so teased about it, and
sure.
That's
why.
So they
yeah.
feel bad, They feel mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to learn nothing about myself or about my community, because
yeah.
they've been teased so much.
They've been teased, right? And they don't have anything to counteract it with. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're always told, that you're not as good as us, you're the outsiders. You're not part of it. If you're always told that. It's very hard. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with many groups. I mean, back in the 60s, they used to say, black is beautiful. Well, how could you believe that is when everything you've been told is terrible, okay? Or they said brown is beautiful, red is beautiful. Well, red is beautiful doesn't have any meaning until you know why. You can say, yes, I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of it. I'm proud that my people have survived after 300 years mm-hmm. of being forced to assimilate into other groups. And I'm proud that, my people were able to accomplish this, and I'm mm-hmm. proud that my people can do these things, It's funny because, I see Indian people back in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and there, first of all, you can't tell they're Indian. I mean, you can't look at them and say they're Indian, like you could up here. I mean, I could say I'm Indian back there and pass, okay? But it's like, there, those people have even worse complex and a worse time
mm-hmm.
because they spend all their energy trying to figure out who's Indian and who isn't. We're here. You don't have to argue about that so much. I mean, not everybody anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That tape is probably going to be done.